of Hazrat Piro Murshid, Inayat Khan. And I'll speak them first, and then we'll sing them in round. Let thy might strengthen me. Inspire me. Let thy love move my soul to joy. Allahu. Allahu. So as a call and response, we'll sing this. Thank you.
So again, what was the, anyone remember what the main essence of the class lesson yesterday was? I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
Remember your beginning and be humble.
To remember your beginning and to be humble.
Your success and your continuity.
Yeah.
What is real nobility?
What is real nobility? Yes, that's beautiful. Very succinct. So.
And how the highest reaches down to the low. Patita pavana, they say.
I love the quote of Anayat Khan where he talks about the aristocracy of the soul and the democracy of the personality, or the democracy of the personality and the aristocracy of the soul. That's it. That's it. Beautiful. But Ayaz was entrusted to a very high position of the treasury, the great treasure of the kingdom. And although wrongly accused by many court members, just remained true to himself, true to the king, to the point where he offered the ultimate lesson to the king, beautiful gesture of modesty along with great nobility. And the king himself then realized that although a king, there was one that was even more kingly than him, to which he owes everything. And the day before, do you remember? I
cannot.
And what was that all about?
Suggestions and impressions.
You're getting ahead of us there, Rabia.
It was limiting yourself by
I cannot. And I was thinking about that, you know, for example, one might say, you know, they cannot achieve something or accomplish something. But another way of saying it is, there's a challenge for me in that achievement, and yet I will to be able to accomplish that or achieve it. Another great lesson that Compto Rinpoche gave me was there's this beautiful, in Lower Dharamsala, there's this magnificent sort of sacred space. It has a temple. It has workshops where Tibetans coming into exile can learn Tibetan handicrafts. They sell the handicrafts there. And the architecture is really exquisite. It was designed by a well-known Japanese architect. So there are all these fountains and walkways and stupas. And that was a wish and a prayer in the heart of my Rinpoche when he, Compto Rinpoche, when he was the Minister of Culture and Religion for the Tibetan government in exile. And he said, he gave that to me as a lesson, where he said, because he's asked me to do things where it's like, I don't, never mind. You don't have to figure out how. Just plant the seed in the heart and it will come to fruition. And in the same way, this happened for him, and this wish and prayer that he had for the Tibetan government, the land was allotted for it, the funds came available, and now this amazing cultural center for Tibet in exile is there. But there was no seeming capacity to accomplish that. But it was just that heartfelt prayer and kind of a release into the universe that it would flow and come. And it did. So we can do that. But we cannot do that if we say, I cannot. Mm-hmm. Right? And then the day before was on. Rabia, you had that.
Suggestions
and impressions, exactly.
And
what? This is our fourth day. So, and can anyone? Let's just remind ourselves what that was about, so we can remain firm.
Stating the positive.
Okay, stating the positive. Yes. Anything else?
That not all your thoughts are your own.
Yeah, what's an impression coming towards us, and really being able to, I mean, it's true mindfulness, being able to discern that if this is something that has just come suddenly. You know, I have to tell you a sweet story. I was walking along one of the paths in the Himalayas with a monk, and I'm very visual. Of course, I'm a visual artist, and I was very interested in the little birds and the flowers and things, and I got a bit of a scolding. Okay, and I don't want this to be misunderstood, and remind me to clarify the story of Murshid Sam, please. But it was a beautiful instruction given. The person said, and this is really one of the ultimate realities of that we learn in meditation and that we can learn in life. It has to do with grasping. So he said to me, you know, when you're noticing this and noticing that, he said, your mind leaves your home. Your mind leaves your home, and that's a form of grasping. And when your mind leaves your home, an intruder can come in. You understand? So when you're, one might say, absent-minded or distracted, this opens a vacuum to allow those impressions to freely enter the home. It really makes a lot of sense, doesn't it?
I even heard Sufis say, toward the one, and don't stop to pick the flowers along the way.
Running over them. It's like sometimes the people are coming to see the guru, and they don't know that the greatest guru is the gatekeeper, and they're very rude to the gatekeeper. I'm not saying that.
Okay.
I'm saying you don't need to grasp at it.
Okay.
But if one remains here, everything will come to you. It will come, the vibration, instead of sort of this, if we think about it in terms of vibration, the vibration of the flower, I mean, we know this scientifically, there's a kind of speed of light, there's a speed of sound. And instead of our mind, which is very mobile, Murshid Inayat Khan says, if one could say there's anything after life, it's that we will exist in the mind realm, and that the mind will continue. Now, you might want to use the word soul. You might want to use the word consciousness. But the point is that which continues after the bodily form drops away. For Inayat Khan, he talks about the mind. And there, he says, it's so important what kinds of impressions we give, that we do purifications. There's nothing wrong with us. But the fact is, we have a lot of things that are cast upon us, and that we need to purify. It's not as if there's something in us inherently not clean, but it is these impressions to keep the mind clean, clear of those impressions. And there's the importance of spiritual practice, because if we give that impression and that vibration to the mind, then that's what will be perpetuated. So it's not that we shouldn't be open. In fact, I seem to remember talking recently about this very open awareness practice that was 360 degrees, right? Not closed. Open. And spacious. But that allows things to come into us, not, it's different. Now, I want to say something, because I don't want it to be misunderstood either in this recording from a previous day or in anyone here. I apologize for not being clear, but someone drew something to my attention, and I feel it's a blessing to be able to offer a clarification. I had mentioned on the first day that Murshid Sam was, and I had thought he was in the car with them, Mansoor, I think he was driving, and then Safaraz said, I think Saul Baradowski was also in the car, who later became the head of the Dervish Healing Order. And they came upon a very bad accident, and that the driver, who I believe was Mansoor, said, would you like for me to stop, Mershon? And he said, no, I want you to go on. And what I thought I said, but what I want to clarify, is that it wasn't an indifference that Mershon Sam had. What he thought would be of a greater benefit would to allow the emergency medical professionals to do their work without interfering, and to keep his mind clear of perhaps a devastating impression, so that he could send just pure energy, healing energy, to that situation. So it wasn't that he had a cold heart, just drive on. It wasn't that at all. It was that he was very well aware of the impression that could come into him that might infringe upon his ability to offer something truly of benefit. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, here's the deal, and anyone that's a parent gets this. You have to sometimes just sit there and witness for the child that, this is another aside, but sometimes we think that we're helping when we're not helping. We're weakening people. We don't always know. Sometimes what their soul might need for its true evolution is to deeply suffer. I can tell you that in my own life, the things that sometimes I think, I rejoice, in the seven limb prayer, I rejoice in the virtuous deeds in ordinary and special beings. Is that pride? I don't know. I don't think so. But I think it's an acknowledgement to an accomplishment of being able to cope with really difficult situations that have allowed me to be able to help people through difficult situations without just giving lip service. I've lived it. I understand. I've maybe lived it in a different way, but believe me, you will survive this. You will get through this. This can build your character.
Without suffering, one is a little shallow. Is that kind of true?
I don't know anyone that hasn't suffered, but I know that people, I know Wally Cotter says it too, don't suffer over your suffering. You've said that a lot. Yep.
Yeah, I get discouraged because I'm suffering, right?
Yeah. So, but the point here is that we don't have to get caught in it. It's like we don't have to become that thing and get stuck in that thing. It builds character. I do.
Probably on my third round or something, which I just really love.
Yeah.
First thing I heard, Sophie Ricochet, one of the quotes that kind of addressed the balance of what Ricochet said, even though my view is as vast as the sky, my actions and respect for cause and effect are as fine as grains of flour.
Can you say it again?
Even though my view is as vast as the sky, my actions and respect for cause and effect are as fine as the grains of flour.
Cause and effect. Every action has an equal and opposite reaction. That's how the scientists put it. The Buddhists call it karma. I hope this is benefit. It is a way of training the mind, really, that Murshid's giving us here. So now we're in our last teaching, and this is again from Sufi Message Volume 2, dealing with philosophy, psychology, and mysticism. And this one is on hope effort and belief. Hope, effort, and belief. When we become conscious of our unworthiness, of limitations, this certainly helps us. So now it's like, oh, wait a minute, I just thought we were supposed to not be doing this. Now he's giving us another. It's like a koan we're dealing with, right? Okay. When we become, and this is again, now we're thinking, we've just gone through the teaching of Ayaz, where he goes to the treasure house every day and everyone, and he spends hours and people think he's stealing the jewels and the treasure, and people have told the king, and then the king drills the holes so that he can look through the wall to really, not just going to believe this negative speech about Ayaz, he's going to see for himself. He's going to get the facts, man. Okay. So he goes and he looks in there to see what Ayaz is doing, and he sees Ayaz go open the treasure chest and take this package out of the treasure. Oh, it's sitting there on top of all of the gold and the jewels, and he opens this package, and there in the package are his clothes, the same clothes that he wore on the day that he was sold on the servant's block to the king. And he puts the clothes on, and he looks in the mirror, and he says to himself, Ayaz, never forget where you've come from and the great trust that the king has in you. It's like us. We should never forget where we've come from and the great trust that the parentage of the universe has given, our divine inheritance. Our divine inheritance. So this is now in context for when we become conscious of our unworthiness, our limitations, it certainly helps us. Yet it can only really help us when we hope to become better. So it's like, you know, I'm having really difficulty with my practice, like maintaining a consistent practice. I acknowledge that. But you know, because I see that and I see the benefit of when I'm really committed to my practice and how that makes difference in my everyday life, I'm going to really make an effort to do better. I mean, everything's showing us something. Everything's revealing something else to us. Everything. The stories I could tell. But if we stop there, then we might just as well stay there forever. When a person says that he's too weak to become better, he stays where he is. But when he admits to himself, yes, today I am weak, but tomorrow I will be better. I will be better. Not I'll try to be better. I will be better. That is the right attitude. We should never allow that spirit of mastery which is in us to become blunted by a feeling of inability. We should never allow that spirit of mastery which is in us to become blunted by a feeling of inability. For the essence of life is hope. And when we hope for the better, we shall become better. It cannot be otherwise. Hopelessness is worse than death. It is better to die than to lose hope. And I know I've said it many times, but those that died in the concentration camps were the ones that lost hope. You've probably heard it said. I hear it a lot dealing with the, you know, with my mom who's been living with cancer for 10 years. How extraordinary is that? But always where there's hope, there's life. Same thing. And also, where there's life, there's hope. It can be both ways. We are able to do anything if we choose to make the effort. The difficulty is that often we do not choose to make the effort. Why not? Because we do not believe. Because we do not believe. What is generally lacking in man is belief. He does not believe. I mean, you've heard that saying, you know, I'll believe it when I see it, and I see it when I believe it.
You're related.
But I'm telling you, this has nothing to do with logic and reason. Nothing. You have, it's like something just has to, we have to give that up. Some things defy any kind of explanation. Absolutely. Another interesting thing is this. Suppose there were 10 people sitting in meditation and Providence, with a capital P, and Providence granted them a boon to ask for as much wealth as they would wish. I'm asking you now, keep that in your mind. Will all 10? A little bit more. Will all 10 ask for the same amount? No. Because no two will agree on how much can be obtained. No two will agree on how much can be obtained. One will ask for 100, another for 1,000, a third will ask for 1,000,000, and a fourth for nothing, because he will not believe that any can be obtained. I think somewhere Murshid says it's our limited thoughts that limit us. Our limited thoughts that limit us. Jason?
What if our idea of wealth is measured in coins?
Sorry?
What if it's not measured in monetary value?
Well, I think that that's true. There's there's great, immense value in so many things, but in this, he's using this as a metaphor. I mean, we could say they were asked how much love they could, you know, receive, right? Mm-hmm. Or how strong they were. Can you, how much, we put the weights there, how much do you think you can lift? Could be anything, but Murshid's using currency as an example. The whole point is, what is our capacity to be able to encompass that which is already being given to us? Are we open to it? The bounty. It's everywhere. Although the river is flowing with clear water, here he's going to give you another example. So, thank you, Murshid. Although the river is flowing with clear water, the different people who go to it will not all be able to take the same quantity of water. Ali Khadr and I had the opportunity to be in Rishikesh together. Do you remember that during the season of... And, of course, the Ganges runs through. It's the holiest city in Varanasi. They're both very special cities in India. And so people go on pilgrimage in the summertime to go to the Ganges to bathe and also to collect water to take back to their homes. Busloads.
The purest river in the world.
Busloads of people. So Murshid says, and I think he's using, really he's not saying the Ganges, but he says, although the river is flowing with clear water, the different people who go to it will not be able to take away the same quantity of water. The one who has a glass will take a glass. One has a pitcher will take a pitcher. A third who has a rubber bag to fill that. And the one who has brought a tank will take a tankful. Again, it's not literal, it's a metaphor about capacity. But no one will take the same quantity of water. And so it is with all of us in our lives. What we obtain is what our belief allows us to obtain, either wealth or virtue, power or rank or spirituality. Anyone want to hear that one again?
Yeah. Or a combination?
That's like that could be the sentence that you put on your bathroom mirror and you look at it every day. Excuse me?
Or a combination of...
Well, I think they're all one and the same. They're just different words.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah, so let's listen to it. And so it is with all of us in our lives. What we obtain is what our belief allows us to obtain, either wealth or virtue, power or rank or spirituality. What our belief does not allow us to attain to, we do not attain. We cannot attain. It is difficult to say to what extent our belief allows us to attain. For our life in this world of limitation, and we cannot believe beyond what we can see.
Can you read the last sentence again?
Yes. What our belief does not allow us to attain to, we do not attain. We cannot attain. It is difficult to say to what extent our belief allows us to attain. For we live in this world of limitation, and we cannot believe beyond what we can see.
Or the most of us, we can, but we just don't. I mean, that's what cannot.
Well,
he's saying most of us don't, but certainly he's saying if we expand our expectations, we can.
Yeah, and I think, again, you know, the first night I talked about this limited self and the unlimited self, you know, the heart, the individuated heart. You know, it's like our heart is a ray of the divine that's become individuated and encapsulated. You know, the spiritual heart, but then there's this soul that's radiating everything really through it, and like connecting those two. Breathing out, removing the impressions of limitation, coming into the unlimited perfected self, drawing from that unlimited perfected self, bringing that into the limited self, to empower it, to lift it up. What keeps us from believing is that we are impressed by the limitation around us, and we can never think of or believe in anything different from what we see. So here is the deal. I know we've heard these stories about people that are bilocating. You know, people see them in one area. I mean, even people have told me about this, about Peer Vilayat. And this is a recent example where there were people, more than one person, witnessing a conversation with him. And this was in India. It happened to be in India. In one area in India. And there was another group of people that witnessed at the same time having a conversation with him in another area of India.
When he was alive.
And now there are also, I mean, there are stories of many stories by Baba Neem Karoli's students. You know, like they'd be traveling with him on the train, and he'd have a bag of oranges, you know, and he just was feeding the whole train, like more and more oranges, you know, or the Sufi saints that we hear. I think Nizamuddin Aliyah, his mother, you know, they were very poor, and of course she has a darga near Sri Aurobindo Ashram. People go there every Wednesday to honor her, but you know, she would, you know, they were poor. Sometimes they didn't have any food, and you know, she'd say, "We're going to feast with Allah," and you know, the food just kept coming from the pot. You know, you hear of Sai Baba, you know, like just from the fingers, the booty dust coming. Well, this defies any kind of logic. But on the other hand, it really, the new science, you know, the string theory, the M theory, these great, you know, thinkers, Kaku, all of them, they're like, they get it. It's all about what vibratory frequency we're lined up with, you know. Murshid Sam called it controlled schizophrenia. The difference between a mystic and someone that's crazy is controlled schizophrenia. Your view is very open.
You believe.
Yes.
A comment about the capacity of the particular container, which tank that you're filling up. The Zen story is, and also the Zubi teaching is, you know, first you have to empty the cup before it can be filled. So you go to the sacred river to get the sacred thing, your vessel is already filled. And, you know, they say, the Sufi teachings, you have to empty your cup first before, and then empty that of your doubts and your reason and your logic and your ego. Then you can be filled. It has to be empty first before it's filled. Right, the challenge is emptying enough.
Yeah.
From our grasping.
It's mine. Well, I think yesterday Murshida Leila was starting to tell the story about, it was about grasping when we were talking about letting go of the stones and people we were witnessing for each other, and I knew what she was about to say, but I'll tell that story because it's so beautiful. You know, they say that when given a golden coin, there are two ways in which we can hold it. One is by grasping. But, you know, that, think about that, all the energy that it takes to hold on to something like this. And the other one is just palm up, holding it in ease. What keeps us from believing is that we are impressed by the limitations around us, and we can never think of or believe in anything different from what we see. Be really open. You'd be surprised. Miracles are happening all the time. The universe is there. It is speaking and supporting and making everything available. It's just whether we have the capacity to let it, to receive it, to be it. How can we get belief, he says. This is the most difficult question anyone can ask. For it cannot be learned. It cannot be taught. It is a grace of God. Belief is essentially the same thing as faith. But only when belief has become a conviction does it turn into faith. Okay, now I think these two terms are very important. Last year we had a big discussion about this at summer school, because we discussed it's, and in some languages those words are almost interchangeable, and in some there's a great distinction, and because it was international, we could talk about that in our sessions. But, you know, belief is something that is almost like a codification of a series of things that we get indoctrinated into. That's a belief. Maybe we've been raised in a certain tradition and we believe it, but how do we then take an extra leap beyond belief and it becomes something even more than that, like this undeniable faith beyond anything that one can imagine in a limitation of a belief structure? Well, you can respond. I mean, does anyone have a thought about that, or do you feel the depth of what that could possibly mean to us?
Some of it trusting in that belief is real, is authentic?
Perhaps, yes. I think that's part of it. Ollie Cotter?
Yeah, maybe this is the next paragraph.
Probably is. You're so well read.
Yeah.
Study.
And it seemed like an icon, Holy Merchant, is what I would say, said that there's some of those four ways of knowing. It's because everybody else believes that, which is incredible, or because someone simply told me so.
Okay, so because everybody else believes that.
Believes it, or
somebody told me.
Authority figure. The next is, I'm fuzzy on maybe the third. But then the fourth one is experience, you know, a personal experience.
A personal experience.
I think this.
So it's based on experience and not
premises. Yeah. Savitri?
The belief that goes into faith for me is beyond the logic of Newton's cause and effect. It takes into the other realms. Isn't our daily logic. Maybe it's a bigger logic.
I have one too. To be it is an experience that I've had that I try to regain again. It's filled with passion and purpose, and knowing you're a part of something is allowing for the cosmos to allow you to manifest. If you think it, there it is in front of you, whether it's by the moment, the next day, the next minute, having to think that you need to see somebody and that person appears before you, or the call on the phone, or you need a tool to finish a job, and it just manifests itself right in front of you. It's not about over there or next week, but it's right now, right in front of your face, whether you see that opportunity or not. Is the belief or the doubt, I think. It can be overwhelming.
Well, here's the thing. I think that some people are into this whole thing like the path of least resistance. Have you heard people say that?
Go with the flow.
Go with the flow. Okay, I think there's real value in that. And at the same time, I think there's also real value, and Mersha talked about that in earlier this week, about how sometimes the struggle is also very important. So sometimes the challenge and the difficulty is to test our faith, you might say, and to help us become more determined in our effort. So they both have real value. We talked about that. I made the emphasis on when I asked for initiation with Murshida Vera, right? The challenges that arose. So sometimes it's to test our faith, our conviction. How can one get belief? This is the most difficult question anyone can ask, for it cannot be learned, it cannot be taught, it is the grace of God. Belief is essentially the same thing as faith, but only when belief has become a conviction does it turn into faith. So he's saying they're the same thing, but they're not. It's interesting. I remember my Murshid, this is Hazard and Icon again talking, of Abu Hashim, Hashim Madani, of Murshid Abu Hashim Madani. He said, I remember my Murshid giving me, in blessing me, this wish. May your faith be strengthened. May your faith be strengthened. May your faith be strengthened. And you remember the stories that Anayat Khan went and sat for months and months and months with his murshid, and the minute he tried to take a pencil out, his murshid would stop talking about spiritual matters and go to the mundane.
Oral tradition.
Well, and being kind of careful about what you give. It doesn't, you don't want to plant your seeds in Buddhism, it's a whole method of inquiry on the part of the student. That's how you get your teachings. It's based on the student's capacity to ask the right questions that evoke the answer. It's like the baby crying and the mother's milk coming. But a Tibetan Buddhist teacher isn't going to give that. If anything could be considered a sin, it is giving the Dharma when it is not asked for.
Giving
the Dharma when it is not asked for. Because it's a waste. It's the Dharma is too precious. You don't give it to people if they don't aren't asking for it.
Or casting your curls.
Yeah.
It was the readiness. That asking is not the capacity within the student to even sort those.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. So, yeah.
And that's being raised by a teacher who would only work you through the problem but never give you an answer.
Well, I love the story of Milarepa. Right.
Or they would just shoot it full of holes.
I know.
Like, and it used to get me so frustrated because I'd be like, oh, why did you ask me?
Yes.
But now, like you were saying, like, they're not ready, you know. They're not ready to put the effort. They're not ready to hear.
Well, and sometimes I ask people that. It's like, yeah. Is this just curiosity seeking, or do you really want to know? I really do, because I think sometimes it's a form of entertainment for people. Do you know?
And then they just like argue with me, you know. Well, I don't see how that would work. Well, you know, well, you just ask me.
Yeah.
How I was able to do this particular thing, or how this happened when
yeah.
I told you, and maybe it wouldn't work for you. I don't know.
Yeah, this is how it worked for me.
Yeah.
You know, perhaps this is helpful. And otherwise, are you calling me a liar? Which is kind of what they're saying. It's an interesting thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or well, you can wait for strength for me, or you have blah, 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 blah. Well, not really.
Then you can say, may your faith be strengthened. So then this is what Murshid says. Being a young man, I thought, is that all he's going to say to me? I mean, he's not going to say, may you be inspired, or may you be illuminated, or prosperous, or something else. But when I think of it now, I know that in that blessing there was all.
There was what?
All. When belief is strengthened, then there is everything. All that we lack in life is mostly because of our lack of belief. But again, it's not something that one can learn or teach or that one can give to anybody. This comes from the grace of God. Maybe asking the grace of God to come to strengthen our belief. to strengthen our belief. To affirm a belief is one thing, and to really believe is another. Many will say they believe, but few really believe. Yes, there are moments when a person is under the spell of belief, but then there come other moments when he is under a spell of unbelief. If this condition vanishes and there comes a steady flow of belief, then as a river reaches the sea, that soul reaches perfection. I'm going to read this paragraph. It's a few sentences. To affirm a belief is one thing, and really to believe is another. Many will say that they believe, but few really believe. Yes, there are moments when a person is under the spell of belief, but then there come other moments when he is under a spell of unbelief. I'm going to stop here because I think there's where we have faith. That's where faith comes in. It's in that gap. Like, even though there may be, we are not believing something, we have faith in it. I mean, we all say we believe in God, don't we? At least most of us do. I mean, we have great belief in germs. We don't necessarily see them, right? Think about it. A story, an interesting thing, it was on a National Geographic, you know, and it was like this, in Africa, they have these rather crude tools where they operate on people. You know, it's like they're sharpened shells. And this one boy walked several miles with his mother and father because he had a brain tumor. Okay, they don't have the same belief in Tylenol and aspirin and, you know, Vicodin or whatever the stuff that they give people these days, you know, for pain, right? They don't have that idea. And so the boy walks to the medicine man in this other village, right? And they're showing this operation. And he's taking this shell and he's like, taking the skull cap off. Like, you know, there's no operating room, there's no mask, there's no nothing. And he removes this mask, he puts the skull back on, and he wraps this big rag around the kid's head, and he gets up and he walks home. I mean, you know, because he just thought that's what you should do. I'm not going to lay in a hospital in ICU for 5 days until whatever. It's a totally different concept. Another, I still have some time. So another thing, I have a good friend that is actually of a very wealthy family in old money in Kansas City, and she's an elder to me, but we've become good friends, and she's a Christian Scientist. And her husband's not. So they had an agreement when they were married that they would use Christian Science practitioners to pray up to a certain point, but if things became real critical, the husband had the opportunity to voice his opinion and to be able to, you know, request or even require medical assistance. Okay, so the boy, the youngest boy, was going to school and he was playing soccer. And he had a hernia. And so he came home, and of course the practitioners had been praying, and the boy wasn't getting better. And so the father requested that the boy have surgery. And so the boy had surgery, and they were trying to give him pills for pain, and he couldn't take pills. He had never taken pills. He was like gagging them, and you know. So then they gave him medication that was liquid. And he was taking that like huge doses of this medicine. Like, you know, it would put an elephant out. His mother was concerned, you know, and they sent him home. It was like, you know, they could give it to him in a spoon. And finally, she said to him, She called him by name, and then she said, I want to ask you, you know, we're giving you this pain medication, but it's having absolutely no effect. And he said, well, you know, Mom, I've never taken medicine. I don't really believe in it. And because he didn't believe in it, he was having no effect and relief from it. Same family, one of the girls, I've met, I know all, I mean, they're all grown and now running the big banking business, right? So one of the girls had fallen from a ski lift. I'm talking literally just like everything was broken, right? So she's put in a body cast, and they're telling them, you know, she's going to be in this body cast for probably 18 months. You know, we'll have to sort of check every now and again. She's just going to be very restricted, and it's going to be a very long process of recovery. And, you know, possibly she's not going to walk again. 6 weeks pass. The mother's like, I think we need to x-ray the, through the, I think she's okay. I think they thought she was hysterical, right? That because of their money and power, they had friends that she convinced, okay, maybe I'm crazy, but will you x-ray anyway through the cast? She was healed. And she walks without any trouble. Faith. That defies even belief. That's beyond belief. Sorry?
And a little help from your friends.
But isn't that extraordinary? The prayer, you know, the absentee healing ceremony. How profound is that?
And you're into, maybe you should tell them that the absentee healing ceremony was mostly all taken from Christian Science.
Yes, indeed. Indeed.
I grew up Christian Science and saw these things.
You know, yeah.
When I was the strongest point, when I was a senior in high school, I was really, really intense into Christian Science, and I was whittling with this little U-shaped knife, a little piece of carving up a sculpture thing, and I jabbed it into my hand, and the instruction with Christian Science is I took it out and didn't look at it. I just put my hand on it, and I went and did prayers and meditation for about an hour and a half. I took it off, and there was a scar on my thumb, and I looked at the knife, and there was like the blood and guts of my thumb in the knife, but there was only a scar. And we went on ski trips with our team group, and someone would break their leg, and they'd be walking the next week, even though they x-rayed. And my friend's mother never got Novocaine for anything in her teeth, and she said, I just didn't feel it. So, and one of the reasons I'm here is because, and I want people to know, because I researched this a lot. When I read Pierre Boulez's book, I said, man, this is Christian Science. And then I finally got to interviewed Cherie Graham, Pierre Boulez, and Zakir, who's the secretary in Suriname, about the connection, because Ora Ray Baker, who's married to Hazrat Nad Khan, is Mary Baker's cousin, and so her manner of speaking came from that. So they use all the similar words. And the one thing you read the first day, it was like, I've read the almost the exact same thing. And it's not that he lifted it, it's that he saw the truth in both the
And Mary Baker Eddy, you probably all know this, so I'm sorry to use this precious time, but she was a traditional nurse, and she became disillusioned with traditional medicine. She felt it wasn't doing much good, and so she started running experiments on her own with placebos and giving people medicine that wasn't medicine, but telling them that it was. And they were healing. So she knew it was the mind and the belief that was healing. I was very in Boston. I spent a lot of time visiting her home and studying her teachings. I'm very touched by her work. So I'll go back one more time. To affirm a belief is one thing, and to really believe is another. Many will say they believe, but very few really believe. Yes, there are moments when a person is under the spell of belief, but then there come other moments when he is under a spell of unbelief. If this condition vanishes and there comes a steady flow of belief, then as a river reaches the sea, that soul reaches perfection. So I'd like to leave you with these words of Murshid, and you're coming back, yes? You need to get this phrase later, Ayaz. Now Murshid said, may your faith be strengthened. May your faith be strengthened. But let us do it as a flicker on our breath. Breathing in, may my faith be strengthened. And out, so that I may see the hidden God in all things. Let me say it again. I didn't say it correctly. Excuse me. I'm saying it one more time. I'll say it several, actually, as we breathe. May my faith be strengthened, breathing in, so that I may see the hidden hand of God in all things. Breathing in, may my faith be strengthened. And as we breathe out, so that I may see the hidden hand of God in all things. May my faith be strengthened, so that I may see the hidden hand of God in all things. May my faith be strengthened, so that I may see the hidden hand of God in all things.